Hi, I'm Foster Brum, the co-host of the Internet Advisor, and this is hour number two of our program from August 28, 2010, where we answer some listener questions. Welcome back to our program and to our second hour, which is the hour in which we take your calls and attempt to answer your questions about your computer, about the Internet, getting on it, getting around it, and as we sometimes say, getting over being on the Internet. Our number again, toll-free, is 1-800-859-0WJR. And we'll be here until 7 o'clock this evening. Again, that's 800-859-0WJR. 5-7. And guys, let's start off by jumping right in and taking a call from Craig in Shelby, Ohio. Craig, welcome to the Internet Advisor. How can we help you? Hello, Craig? Craig?
Craig, I think you might be listening to
asleep at the wheel. We'll put him on hold.
Listening to the radio instead of turning it down and listening to us.
There's a long way to Ohio. Sometimes it takes a while for our boys to get down there.
Yeah. No, and this Ohio is just so boring to drive through.
Oh, be careful now.
It is. It's so flat. I mean, you know, we took the turnpike. We went to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame last week.
Yes.
So after the show, the next morning, we went to the, was it Cleveland? And that is the most boring drive, I'll have to tell you, on that turnpike. But on the way back, we took Ohio 2. That was cool.
But I'll tell you something not boring is the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
No, that was that was
great. Was that awesome?
That was great. Fun. Six stories. Yeah. They had Bruce Springsteen there. Nothing against Bruce, but, you know, he's not my favorite. he took up the entire fifth and sixth floor, and all this memorabilia. But what was really cool is all this electronic and interactive computer stuff they had there.
You won't feel that way when Talon takes five and six.
There you go. When he takes seven and eight, that's when you mean it. All right, let's go to Glenn, who was with us from Howell. Glenn, welcome to the Internet Advisor. How can we help you this afternoon?
Well, thanks for letting me ask this question. Sure. I have a great deal of difficulty playing YouTube videos. Mm-hmm. When I go to click on them to play, I just see a circle. It circles on a black screen, and I never get the video.
Okay, well, let's ask a couple of questions real quick. What type of computer are you using? What operating system's on it?
It's an HP with Vista Home Premium.
How much memory do you have in your Vista machine?
I think this is a 4 gig.
Okay. And what type of internet connection do you have, DSL or cable?
A DSL.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
This is Comcast.
So it's cable.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, good.
And when you download other things off the internet, do they come down fairly
brisk?
They play,
brisk? I other players seem to work, but.
And what version of YouTube, what version of the browser are you? Are you using IE for a browser?
Well, I have both IE and Firefox, and both are up to date.
And it doesn't matter which one you use, both of them handle YouTube the same way?
No, makes no difference.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, that's the first thing I would have tried was an alternate browser. YouTube requires Flash Movie Player, right? Or the Adobe Flash.
Right.
So the first thing I would do is go into Add Remove Programs, or in Vista, it's Programs and Features, Control Panel, Programs and Features,
right.
Uninstall the Adobe Flash in there, and then afterwards, open up your browser. If you just go to YouTube's website, it basically will tell you, you do not have the Adobe software required to play these videos. Click here
to download,
and it'll take you right back to the Adobe website to reload it. I mean, have you ever been prompted to update your Adobe software?
Sure, and I have. I'm not sure what it is, 9.2.
Well, you know,
they have 10,
one something.
Yeah, they have 10.1 out, 10.13, I think.
10.1 but it's never played.
Really? And you have two different browsers. I mean, have you tried to uninstall it in the control panel, though?
No.
Okay, I would do that. That way, when you install it, the Adobe Flash will detect, wait a second, you're running both Internet Explorer and Firefox. Let me install the software for both of those browsers at this point, and it might correct the issue. At least, I mean, we're hoping you got a 50-50 chance it's going to correct it for one of them.
And something like Flash, where it's a plug-in into the browser, you not only want it to then shut your browser down and then pull it back up, but you may want to actually shut your computer off.
That's a good point.
And then come back up and then go to your browser again.
Especially because it's never worked.
Right.
So go into a control panel, Programs and Features, remove the Adobe Flash, and like Gary said, shut down your computer, reboot, power back up, go to YouTube again, and and then it should just walk you through the wizard to add the Flash
video.
Yeah,
and do it from the YouTube site, and it should get you there.
And you'll add the latest version as well. Because obviously something's corrupted, and what we're trying to do is say, rather than go out and try to figure out what's corrupted, just uninstall and load a fresh version.
And by the way, Glenn, congratulations to you for having two browsers. So
that's
often
right.
we remind people the value of having those two browsers is then that you can troubleshoot. Is the problem in Internet Explorer or is in Firefox? But in this case, for instance, because you had the problem in both of your browsers, that helps lead us in another direction.
Well,
that says that it may very well be the Adobe plugin that is the issue then.
Or an antivirus program is interfering it, or a virus program he has installed. So what type of antivirus program do you have installed on your computer?
I have AVG.
Okay, good.
So you might want to just check it to make sure that for whatever reason it's not blocking any Flash programs. But AVG shouldn't.
Okay, Glenn.
There's one other last tip I want to throw
me.
In real quick, too, that I found, because I get that same problem sometimes, too, and I use a Mac. what I've done with Comcast is, on occasion, I'll have them reset my cable modem as well. Sometimes, for some reason or another, if it hasn't been reset in quite a long time, it tends to slow down a bit.
So you call Comcast, or you just unplug it for a moment and plug it back in?
Actually, you can call Comcast's 800 number, and it will actually... walk through it and reset it right through the phone.
They'll
you just
a ping
hit a button and it'll do it for you.
Really?
Sure.
Yep.
So I could do that with my wife when I know she's downloading email. I can just call on the way home and have it reset the modem and bugger her up.
You are asking for it, Dad. You are asking
that
for it.
Staying way away from that.
That sounds like fun.
Yeah, I agree with you, Glenn. Ooh.
My son would be playing Xbox and I'll break his internet connection.
Man. Yeah, that is cool.
Yes, of course I'm the authorized person for this phone call.
Hey, Glenn, thanks a million for your call. All right, a quick break. When we come back, we've got open phone lines and we're just itching to answer your questions. Now, remember, we've got until 7 o'clock for you to get on with your question, and phone lines are available at 1-800-859-0957. That's 1-800-859-0WJR. Welcome back to the Internet Advisor, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, and Cal Carson. Lots of brain power in studio here, just waiting to answer your calls and your questions about your computers, about the Internet, anything that has to do with getting you online and getting you around the Internet. Here's the number, and it's toll-free, 800-859-0957. And we have a rather strange phenomenon. I think so many people are out there right now and wrapping up their summer and enjoying as much of this beautiful weather as we have. We have a lot of open lines, which means that if you've been saying to yourself, well, I'm not going to try because I have to wait so long and I won't get in. Get in right now. This is your chance. 800-859-0957. That's 800-859-0WJR. And Cal, just quickly before we start taking our callers again, there's an Apple event coming up. I think it's coming up this week, this Wednesday.
Yes.
And since we haven't got, Eric is on vacation, we haven't got the Mac minute. Maybe you can fill us in on what you think is happening there.
People by the thousands are going out into orchards and they're going to pull these things off of trees and they're going to be happy with
them. That's coming soon enough.
Yeah, that's coming soon too. On Wednesday this week, Apple will have another one of their signature product launches that they always do. And generally, something's coming out new or something's enhanced or more groovier than the last thing that they put out and that sort of thing. So there's a lot of speculation going on because, of course, for some reason or another, and me and Steve Jobs were sitting down the other day.
So did he tip you off on what he's going to talk about today?
He was really kind of elusive about it, but, you know, I tried to, you know, I said, you know, Steve, you know, have another cappuccino. And he said, you know, just wait till Wednesday. I'll hook you up then. I said, okay, fine, I'll wait. So, but at any rate, though, a lot of other people who were sitting around us decided that it might be something new with the iPad, but that's kind of new still, so I don't think it's going to be that.
Mm.
Someone said it may be something with the iPhone, that's kind of new, so we don't think it's going to be that. But Apple TV has not had tweaks in a long time.
Long time, yeah.
Been sitting there back in the corner by the television set, very quiet.
it needs a screen, I think, is what the problem was.
Well, maybe so. Yeah. Maybe that might be
it. Just a box about the size of a GameCube, right?
Set of rabbit ears on the top. It's about the same size as the Mac Mini,
yes,
which is a tiny computer, but a little bit thinner. And it allows you to be able to buy shows through iTunes and be able to show them on any Apple device that you might have in your house.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people are saying, well, you know, we want it a little bit of this or this extra thing.
So that might be going that. Might be going that direction.
So we think that
iPods,
if there's any,
too. I heard that the iPods, maybe some tune-up on
yeah,
that.
Yeah, there might be some new enhancements in iPod. I'm thinking there's going to be more cameras in the other models, because the little tiny one that they put out back around Christmas time last year had a camera in it. And I figured since they put a 5-megapixel camera in the iPhone, there's probably going to be some upgrades in cameras and some iPods as
yeah.
well.
Mm-hmm. You know, and we tease you a little bit about, oh, yeah, you and Steve Jobs. But the other Steve, Steve Wozniak, actually has been here in the studio.
That's right.
And he came to do the show with us because he really was here visiting the Mac Group. And this was one of the very first Mac user groups in the country. Certainly one of the biggest ones. And Cal, you're very involved in the leadership of that organization. Tell us a little bit about that user group, because there's not only the Mac one, there's Simco for on the PC side as well, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Mac Group Detroit has been around for 24 years. Matter of fact, last Sunday was our 24th anniversary.
Wow.
That we had. It was founded by our founder, Terry White. Long time ago, downtown Detroit, he started it because he had a Mac, and he was wondering if there was anybody else around that could help him out with it. And one of the people who came into his business said, well, why don't you just form a user group? And that's exactly what he did. He put an ad in the newspaper, and folks started to come out. And it was funny because at our meeting last week, I dug out the old copy of Mac News, which is our periodical that comes out every month. And, well, it used to come out every month, but now we have a blog, so it comes out every day. And we went through some of the stuff that he had when he first started out as a Mac user. Mm-hmm. He had 2 Mac 512s. Each one was $1,999 a piece. He had a laser writer printer, which was black and white. Mm. It cost $5,400.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
He had a dot matrix printer. That printer cost $700. Oh, so it's just amazing how the yeah. technology has gotten better, but the price has gone down in it. And that's really great to see.
Yeah. All right, we got some callers, and let's get to them. Eric from Thamesville, Canada. Eric, welcome to WJR's Internet Advisor. What can we do for you?
Well, you know how Google's like storing all people's information and stuff, like everything you search and stuff? Mm-hmm. I just want to know if there's any way you can be like private online and all that.
Oh, boy. That's a really good... No, there are things called anonymizers.
Anonymizers, yeah.
And I think that a lot of the web browsers that are out now allow you to surf anonymously. Guys, help me on this, because I believe that there are settings on both Firefox and on Internet Explorer.
Well, let's try this from a different angle, if
okay.
I could. Eric, what is it that you're trying to keep from getting out on the Internet?
Just, I want to make sure, like, there's, like, you know, how Google's, like, just storing all this, like, information in a huge database and all that. It's just, how do you, like, get anonymity online and, like...
Anonymity online, yeah. Yeah. I know it's a question that's
yeah.
a very good question a lot of people are asking.
It has always been my feeling, and others may disagree with me, is that if you go on the Internet, you're out in public. You might as well forget it. There's no place you can hide. There's a way someone can find out who you are and where you are. And if they don't do it by the direct information of your name, address, and phone number, they can trace you down by your IP address. There's a way to find someone eventually if you want to find them bad enough.
Right. And then any corporation, I mean, Google's in this for profit, wants to do trend analysis, find out what people are looking at. They provide these statistics to advertisers, like people are interested in this type of information. Right, Gary?
Sometimes they provide it in aggregate, and other times they provide... very targeted information.
Right.
And the one thing that you have to bear in mind is that there's a company called Axiom, and they have the vast majority of the information around credit card purchases. So if you think right now that people can't get your credit card purchases online, that's untrue. They can sell... Axiom will sell that. Other companies like them will sell that. Mm-hmm. So,
I mean, it's just not Google. I mean,
it's
everyone's
not just Google, but this is offline. This is in the real world. They'll sell information about what you buy. So if you think it's only happening online, it's not. It is happening
online.
Oh, I see
what you're saying.
Not only online.
Gotcha.
Because it's about credit cards as well.
With Eric's point, aren't there things called anonymizers?
Yeah,
where
you
essentially
can use that.
You enter the internet through
a portal, if you will,
or an IP address, essentially, right?
Right.
So that, in other words, Eric, so the report comes back that this is Eric from this IP address, but it's not you.
Okay. Right.
Yeah, so if you go to Wikipedia, they talk a little bit about what it is, how it works, and it really functions as a proxy.
Right, exactly.
So that people can't tell that it's you. They can tell it's your online identity that's doing all this, but then you can change that. And it's garbly goop because you become a different online identity right. The next time.
Right.
So, you know, then you can take and go and find one that works for you. Now, these are not, while they're free in many cases, some of them you also can buy.
Yeah, you can buy them, yeah.
But they also provide a load, or they create a load on your computer, so it'll slow things down a little bit.
Right. Now, I mean, if you have a Google account, then Google does track that information as well, and you have public information. There's something called Google Dashboard, which you can, like Facebook has been struggling. Well, mm-hmm. No, they're not struggling. They're not even trying to protect your privacy.
Doesn't seem that way.
But Google does provide something called Dashboard for your iGoogle account, mm-hmm. Or for your Google account that
then,
you can go to.
And then Windows Secrets, so windowssecrets.com. Is one of the sites that provides reviews of all the free ones out there, the free programs. So you'll get an idea at least who they think are good ones, so that if you're going to use one, you know, you might as well use one of the best ones. And these are they're reviewing the free ones here.
Right. And I like Cal's point. I mean, the internet is not the Wild West anymore. Not really. And just anything that happens is the same thing, is treated as if you're in the streets. I like that. Yeah. It was a great point, Cal.
Yep. Eric, so there's some thoughts for you to chew on, Eric. I don't know that it is entirely possible to be completely anonymous online anymore. But, there are a lot of people who share your concern about all the information that's being gathered about us and who ends up using it. Eric, thanks so much for a great question, all right? Have yourself a great end of summer here. Hey, Joe from Livonia, hang in there. We'll be right with you in just a moment. And for the rest of you folks, we got a half an hour left. We got lots of phone lines open for you and available at 1-800-859-0957. That's, again, toll-free, 800-859-0WJR. Back to answer your questions in just a moment. Welcome back to the Internet Advisor. I want to thank Cindy Cooper, who was in this weekend, sitting in for Eric Anderson, who is off on vacation. Scott Anderson, the other part of the Flying Anderson Brothers, behind the wheel as our engineer. Thank you again for being with us. Don't forget, InternetAdvisor.net is our homepage, and that's the place to keep up with us as we start the football season. And we will be moving as we're preempted. Like next weekend, we will be preempted. But we're going to be posting some things there from time to time on our homepage, some interviews that I'm going to be doing. I hope to go back to interview some of the folks that we've talked to in the past, like Mrs. Wizard,
who has
that help site that she's been running from down south, and so
some folks from TechSmith. Yep, there's a bunch of folks,
a whole bunch
over
of people
the last 13 years.
Yeah, we hope to get hold of. So let's get back to answering our folks who are online with us right now, like Joe from Livonia. Joe, how may we help you here in the Internet Advisor?
Good afternoon, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
And welcome back, Foster.
Thank you.
I've got an old PowerMac G4 called the Gigabit Ethernet, and this is kind of a specialized question, so it's more in Gus and Cal's and maybe Foster's area. I want to replace the video card that I have in it, but I'm having trouble finding a site that I can trust to give me what either NVIDIA or ATI cards would be fully compatible with that particular unit.
Yeah,
you've probably got a PowerMac G4. It's probably gray or silver faced with the handles built into the top of the tower.
The top of the tower is translucent. The side is gray. The front is bluish gray.
Oh, okay. You're way back in the old days.
Yeah, it's a gigabit Ethernet. It's a dual processor 500.
Okay, I would probably try. There's a couple of places I would go to that I have used before in the past that are reliable, in my opinion. One of them is called Operator Head Gap. Now, that sounds weird as heck, but it's true. Operator Head Gap will probably have what you're looking for. They deal a lot with a lot of vintage Macs. So if you do a Google search on Operator Head Gap, you'll be able to get to their website. And they also have a phone number. You can call them and ask them questions. The second place that I would go to would be Shreve Systems out of Shreveport, Louisiana.
I'm sorry,
Louisiana.
I lost you on that last one.
It's called Shreve, S-H-R-E-E-V-E, Systems.
All right, I lost you again. I'm going to try and do this on the headset.
There you go.
We can hear you now.
Now we can hear you better, too.
Okay, try Shreve, and that's S-H-R-E-E-V-E Systems out of Shreveport, Louisiana. They also deal with a lot of vintage equipment. And then my last thought, maybe, but I doubt, would be Otherworld Computing.
OWC?
Yep. Those three places, either they will either have it for you or they'll know where to point you to someone who can get it. But I'm sure Operator Head Gap will probably have it for you for sure.
All right. And when will your next Mac group be?
We usually meet on the third Sunday of the month.
Okay.
The next one, I think, will probably be, I'm going to say that's,
the 19th,
be
probably.
Yeah.
September 19th. Mm-hmm.
September 19th, yeah.
And
but if you go to macgroup.org,
yep,
you can find it right there on the front page.
And we'll also, by the way, with our internetadvisor.net, we try to publicize that as well, put that on the homepage.
We'll be off on the 18th, but we'll be here on the 11th,
right.
Off next week, here on the 11th from 7 to 9, and then off on the 18th.
But we, if you go to internetadvisor.net, we'll have the link there, too, for you. Okay?
All righty, guys.
All right. Thank you very much. Take care. All right. And let's go to Sharon from Lansing. Sharon, how can we help you here on the Internet Advisor?
Well, I just had to upgrade to AOL 9.5 because I installed Windows 7, mm-hmm. and they tell me that's the only one that'll work with it.
Mm-hmm.
And when I open up the email page, there's a great big ad on the bottom of the page all the way across from one side to the other. How do I get that off there?
You can't.
I was afraid you were going to tell me that because it doesn't look like a pop-up.
Welcome to AOL.
Yeah.
I just put 9.5 on a person's machine yesterday, and that ad is down there, and that's part of what goes along with the game.
Okay, I was afraid you were going to say that.
Well,
but the software's free.
Well, actually, I want to get out of AOL.
and you can do that. Right?
But I just don't know, what else is out there or how they work. So,
you're
and
just
also,
looking for
is there a way to save all my emails, my old emails that are in my filing cabinet?
Not usually.
Well, I thought that there was a program out now, but I've heard this before, that would be able to open them. I mean, I know which files they are to actually save the folders.
Right. I mean, there are conversion sites. I've looked on this occasionally every once in a while, and I've actually downloaded a couple free ones. And sure enough, when I downloaded the free one, it does display my emails from AOL, but it won't let me save them unless I purchase it. So, yes, you can purchase them.
Well,
I'm willing
conversion to purchase it if it'll work.
But I just don't recall the names of the conversion programs.
But there are conversion programs out there. What I would suggest is do save those emails. If you know where they are, the file they're in.
Yes, I have them all saved.
Burn them off onto a disk for yourself and save them. And then, as Ed said, then you can do some homework on the conversion programs, and as you said, if it's worth it to you to put some money into that, then look for them and investigate conversion.
It's the filing cabinet.
Yes.
Save the filing cabinet too. That's what I'm worried about.
Yeah.
And so, there's a couple. I just looked online. There are a couple free pieces of software that will allow some conversion. So I don't know anything about them, so I won't give you the names. But there are a couple out there. So if you looked at AOL 9.5 conversion for email, it'll say, convert the personal filing cabinet and export from AOL. And I think it just provides an export file that you can import then elsewhere.
Well, I was going to say, now, who is your internet service provider? Because are you still using dial-up?
No, I'm broadband, but it's through AT&T.
So, I mean, AT&T is providing you an email account.
Yeah, I know, Yahoo. So I was going to check into that.
Right. I mean, that's one option. So, you can...
Can you export?
But she wants to get her old mail.
She wants to get her old mail out of AOL
and move it over to whatever she's going to.
And that's when you can use, Outlook as an example.
E-Preserver is a
product. That's the one I heard about.
Yeah.
What is ePreserver, Gary?
It's just a conversion that converts the personal filing cabinet from AOL into a file. That part I can't tell you. Mm-hmm. I just looked at a couple sites, and they have decent reviews on it.
Yeah. Well, then, it sounds like what the pattern would be then that she would take that ePreserver, for instance, take her filing cabinet, and then use that to export it to Yahoo?
Well, if I was her, the first thing I would do is make a copy of that filing cabinet, put it on a separate folder away from everything else.
I have it on my desktop.
There you go.
Good.
And then I would try and convert the copy that you made.
Yeah, but what do you convert it to? Usually it converts it to an email software that's installed on your computer, like Outlook or Outlook Express or, what is
How
it,
about
Eudora?
Windows 7 Mail? Will it do that?
I don't know, and that's a good question.
I have to have one of them. I don't have either one of those.
Well, you get Windows 7 Mail with Windows 7.
Yes.
You do?
It's
built right into the operating system.
Right into it.
And I just did this week. I don't know half of what's in there yet.
No,
that's okay. Neither
great
do we.
Great question, though.
No, as a matter of fact, that is what I use because I didn't want it to open Outlook on my wife's computer. I used the Windows 7 Mail, and I found it to be very good. And it is essentially, we talked about it, I think, last week. It's essentially the old Outlook Express, which has been new and improved and upgraded.
I never used that. So
Is now the mail program that's built into Windows 7. And to be honest with you, it worked very well.
Now here's a dumb question. How do I find the mail program in Windows 7?
It just says mail.
When
you click on the little round circle on the bottom, it pops up and go to all programs.
Yeah, I'm on that now, but I don't see anything that says mail.
I believe it's under accessories. Hold on.
Yeah, I looked there and I couldn't find
it.
So it's not installed on my Dell one. So I'm looking for, I have a Windows 7 machine, and I'm actually using the Windows search. So usually if you type in mail in the search, it should find it. But
it was just there this morning.
Well, I have the ultimate version of it.
I do too, Eddie. But that's what I'm putting on.
Okay, so it's possible that we need to go into add remove programs or programs and features and add the feature in there. It's not installed on my Hewlett Packard.
Yeah, I don't have it installed on mine either, which is interesting. I don't use it because I use Outlook. But,
right.
Because I found it immediately when I opened up my wife's... my wife has the desktop with Windows 7 on it. And when I went to it, because I didn't want to, as I said, open up Outlook, I just wanted to use a mail application. It was right there on the left-hand side under all programs.
Okay, I haven't seen that.
Well, one way they say that you can find out whether or not it's installed on your computer is you click Start and then type in the words Windows Live Mail and see if it appears in the results.
It could be under Windows.
Windows Live Mail.
That's right. Let's go to Windows Live.
Because
it's right at the bottom.
Is it?
And there's mail right there.
Okay, so
Cal.
Came out of the mouth of a Mac person.
Good job, Cal.
This is a madness that I just don't know.
Windows Live, I forgot about that. I don't use it very much.
Yes, and you're right. Windows Live is the new format that Microsoft is pushing hard because it's the old Hotmail, and that what they try to do is to hook you up so you're essentially linked up, which, by the way, may answer your question about what to go to next. If you want to, you could use what's the old Hotmail that's now called Windows Live Mail.
And that's the same thing?
Yeah, and it has all sorts of great features on there, too.
Right, and it's independent of your internet service provider, so it's independent of AT&T's Yahoo.
Yep.
So when you move, it just follows you wherever you go.
Yep. So it might be the answer to a lot of your questions, Sharon, okay?
Yep.
The interface looks clean.
I'm there, so I'll hunt through it and see what it says. Yeah. Windows Live Essentials.
Yeah, and I think you'll really enjoy it once you get your hand on
it. It's not Windows Live Essentials.
No. Okay.
Windows Live Mail.
Windows Live
Mail. The mail it took. I mean, the window it took me to when I put in Windows Live Mail.
Okay. Well, because Foster, weren't we just talking about Live Essentials being an entire security suite?
Yeah. That was Windows. Yeah.
Well, at the top here, it's got
Microsoft
Home,
Essentials.
Hotmail, Messenger, Essentials. So I think I just have to go and
dig into that.
Hotmail.
Okay.
Yeah.
I
think that's true.
Yeah.
But that's where it is. It's under Windows Live.
Okay.
And the interface looks good.
It is. It's a very clean interface, and that's why I enjoyed using it because it was very simple and clean. But it may tie you into that the old Hotmail, which is now Windows Live Mail. Okay. Hey, we've got time for a few more questions. We got some phone lines open, so if you want to call. Get that question in right now at 1-800-859-0957. That's 800-859-0WJR. And Brian from Brighton will be with you in just a moment to answer your question. Well, it's been a great summer. We've been having a great time here with you every Saturday from 5 to 7. And as you may have heard us say before, that's going to be changing as we move into the football and the basketball season and heading around to March Madness. But during that time, if you go to internetadvisor.net, you'll find out when we're on the air, when we're not, and what times we're on the air. Let's get to some of the phone calls that are here right now and make sure we take care of business today. And welcome to Brian from Brighton. Welcome
this
to the internet.
Brian.
Yes, Brian, what can we do for you, sir?
Thanks for taking the call. I enjoy your program. Always learn a lot.
Well, sure. Thank you, Brian.
Having some difficulties with my wife's HP Pavilion. It's about 6 months old. We recently upgraded from Vista to Windows 7.
Mm-hmm.
Microsoft Office each time wants to, it says it's not installed properly and wants us to reinstall it. After 3 hours on the phone with HP, they exposed an admin account, and we reinstalled it, logged in as that admin, and then it worked fine. But then we logged back into my wife's username, it comes back with the problem. It recurs. So it seems to be a rights issue with Microsoft Office and that install.
Can you run as administrator?
Well, it's probably not a rights issue. It's probably a corrupt user profile.
Right.
So you might want to, while you're logged in as your wife, whose
right.
account is probably as administrator, you can possibly make a new user account. Right, Gary?
Yes.
Yep.
I did that. I tried a third account.
Oh, and how'd that work out?
It has the same issue.
Oh, okay. Well,
even though the Office is reinstalled with as logged in as that super user admin account, and then their only other advice is to say, well, let's reinstall the operating system. And then reinstall the Microsoft Office.
Oh, I would not reinstall the operating system, but have you thought about reinstalling Office?
Well, we did that. Logged in as a super user.
Okay.
Now, these other accounts hadn't been used when my wife first created the PC. Mm-hmm. So she was the sole user on the account, and maybe that has something to do with it. So.
Mm. Cal, you had a...
Well, I was going to try the Gary Baker method, and this is Windows 7, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Do they have a system restore in Windows 7?
Yes, they do.
Well, I would go back to the date prior to installing Office on the machine, roll it back using system restore, and then... No, let me rephrase that.
Well, the computer's 6 months old.
I'd remove Office, roll back to the date prior to system restore, and then reinstall Office again and see whether or not that would fix it.
Okay.
So what we're trying to do is trying to give you alternatives to reinstalling the operating system, right? So
understood
you know,
that.
The whole idea is to try the easy stuff first and keep trying them until you have to go back and do the draconian, let's go just reinstall Office.
Right. Okay.
You know, there's some other issues. There's a program called HP Advisor, I believe, or Monitor, that keeps track of some things and some devices, and it keeps trying to, it's like it's loading tray apps, and you see this process going on every time you log in.
Right, yeah, that's an HP Advisor, right?
Hmm.
I mean, it's just a program that advises you, so when you click on the button, it'll take you to the website to get additional support from HP. Personally, I disable that because I don't want it in my startup. It slows down my computer.
Now, I was going to say the same thing. Have you gone to msconfig to see what's in your startup?
Well, that's probably not the problem. His problem is something with Microsoft Word. Later on, once he gets that working, he can fine-tune his operating system.
Now, so we actually removed Microsoft Office.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. This is with the help of the HP people. And then they somehow exposed that admin account, which I know it's there. It just was never
It's a hidden account, right?
Point.
It is.
And then at that logged in as that admin, we reinstalled Microsoft Office, and it works underneath that admin account, but not for my wife's existing or like a third dummy account that I created.
Well, when you created the third dummy account, did you set it up as an administrator or?
My wife's account had admin rights, and that dummy account had admin rights as well.
Okay, now did they have you try to install Office? Well, you know what? Let me put it this way. Does your computer have ship with the trial version of Office 2000? Was it 7?
No, I have the OEM disk.
Okay,
I understand that, but did it ship with the Office 2007 trial version?
Right.
Did you go through Control Panel and Programs and Features and see if the trial version was also installed on your computer?
No, I haven't.
I'm just wondering. So when you first opened it up. Did it come with the Office 2007 OEM, or did it come with, or is that
they
something you purchased?
They shipped it with a disk, but I believe the program was already installed.
Yes.
Oh, okay, well, that's good. Yeah. That's good, then. You probably don't have the trial version on there. Well, that's good, because I know I've run into problems with
If you said the program was already installed, That is the trial version.
That is the trial version, Eddie. I think you may be onto something.
So you got to get all. I think what he needs to do is go into Control Panel, make sure all versions of Office has been removed from that computer.
Okay, I can do that.
Including the trial version. You may be onto.
And after that's all been removed, then reboot that machine, and then go back in as administrator and install Office again.
Okay. Well,
now, you've given administrative rights to your wife's user account, right?
She already had it.
The account was set up with her.
Yeah,
maybe the option is to remove her account and recreate it, but...
And then turn around and install, give her administrative rights and then install it with...
With your wife account.
Yeah, install it with the wife's account.
Or you could possibly right mouse click on it. So instead of double clicking on the CD and letting it open up, you can right mouse click on the CD and select Explorer. And usually you'll see an auto run there or a setup file. You should be able to right mouse click on that and select Run as Administrator.
Yes, that's what I was thinking.
Now, one other...
But you shouldn't need to do this with the Microsoft.
You shouldn't have to.
Right. I mean, I've run into this problem with other apps, but usually not Microsoft.
Yeah, I would install this after you built back your wife's account, assign her administrative rights, and then try to install it with that account.
But make sure you back up all your wife's documents.
Is there a way to rename the existing admin account and just rename it to the account she wants to log in, or is that...
You could always let her use it, right? Of course.
But you want to make sure that admin account is password protected. And
right.
I've heard that you can even rename that account to something different.
And you can. But now you have nothing above that as an admin account. So if it's just her using the machine, you're not going to let anybody else use it. That will be one way to take care of that problem.
You know, Brian, we got to wrap right on this now. I would suggest putting that question into our forum, if you can, and we can have other folks out there who are skilled as well to chime in and see if they can help you
or
with
Brian.
That. Folks, thanks so much for being here in the summer with us. Stay tuned. Great stuff coming here on WJR. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
You've been listening to the second hour of our Internet Advisor from August 28, 2010. Be sure to visit our homepage at www.internetadvisor.net and take advantage of our toolkit, where Ed Rudell has gathered all the tools that you'll need to surf the Internet safely and solve a whole host of problems. And don't forget to check out our Internet Advisor page on Facebook for more news. Thanks for listening.